talk about these connections?
I believe there is something in human history. I call it the spirit of history. It's like a spring, a stream that continue to move. And individuals and forces come along to become symbols of what is good, what is right, and what is fair. And that's why I wrote this little book to say to people that you too can allow yourself to be used by the spirit of history. Just find a way to get in the way. When I was growing up, my mother and father, my grandparents and great-grandparents always tell me, don't get in trouble, don't get in the way. But I was inspired by Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks and others to get in the way, to get in trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble. And we all must find a way to have the courage to get in trouble, to do our part. Every generation must find a way to leave the planet, leave this little spaceship, Earth, this little piece of real estate, a little better than we found it, a little cleaner, a little greener, and a little more peaceful. I think that's our calling. We have a mission, a mandate, and a moral obligation to do just that.
John Lewis, 13-term Congress member, former chair of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, arrested more than 40 times, beaten repeatedly as he fought for voting rights and against a segregated America. He's just written a new book called Across That Bridge, Life Lessons and a Vision for Change. If you'd like a copy of today's broadcast, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Felser, Amati Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Stelly, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Walla, Ahmed Abdelkaddous, Vesta Gadarz. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Up next, our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, and we're doing the show live on July the 5th. It's not too late to say Happy Independence Day in Dearborn. You can still do your fireworks today. That's right. That's the rule in Dearborn. You can do even the major fireworks the day before, the day of, and the day after July 5th. Just be careful with that. My name is Jay Koronick, and I'm happy to be here with you. Joining me in a few minutes will be Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director. We are excitingly awaiting the arrival of our consul candidate to be interviewed today. Trying to do a new person every week according to their schedules, availability, and, you know, their preference. They don't have to be on WHFR if they don't want to, but we're not charging anything. Anyway, Tarek Bedoun is one of the candidates, and he's scheduled for today, and we hope that he will be getting here shortly. Okay. And the Dearborn Police just texted me personally, I'm in trouble. No. First of all, there's something in the paper this week, and we always go over the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald, as is appropriate to time and significance by our decision. And you should be reading them regularly. In fact, both, because they're not the same. Well, it's the same news, isn't it? No. Even if they do a story on the same topic, they write it differently. And so you really should be reading both papers and supporting local journalism, stories at length, not just sound bites or little headlines on a blog somewhere. You really need to know more than that. And if you're listening to the show, that's why you listen, of course. So enough said there. In any event, they want to remind you to sign up for text messages at nixol.com. Just let them know your address here in Dearborn, and you will automatically be getting just Dearborn Police Department messages. I thought it would just be warnings, but now they're sending these helpful little hints frequently. In fact, too frequently, I think. Like this holiday weekend, folks, you are to be sure to lock up your house and be careful of robbers and so on who might prey on your home, steal something from it, for example, while you're gone, if you're gone away. Well, today is the 5th. The odds are a lot of people have already left. So thank you very much. But they have so many helpful hints and tips. I think a lot of people will start thinking that the Nixol service is something they don't want. And just word to the wise, anybody from Dearborn Police Department may disagree with me, but I'm almost getting to the point as I don't want the messages unless it's an emergency, really an emergency. And of course, to them, if there's a warning of a thunderstorm on the way, which we do share with you if it activates our emergency alert system, if it's very serious and it's coming this way, they're starting to do that too. And they, what do they know about weather? They don't. And, the last couple times they did it, it turned out there was no rain whatsoever. So I don't need the Dearborn Police Department to give me a weather report unless it's like tornado will be here in 30 minutes. It's not just, a possibility. It's coming this way. That's the kind of thing I want Nixol to tell me. In fact, a lot of people have a lot of clutter on their phones. I get almost no messages. But when it comes in and it's just a little reminder about this or that, that's wonderful. But this, I don't think this is the medium to do it. You decide. Well, of course, happy Independence Day. I believe it's 237 years we've been together as, since the Declaration of Independence. Took a little while to win that war, didn't it? And then to get a Constitution, then to get a Bill of Rights. Of course, but 237 years since the Declaration of Independence. And a couple of stories here. One is, I don't have in front of me, and that unfortunately is due to, I guess I put it in my bag for my holiday celebration yesterday, Lakewood, Ohio. And somebody said, that's near the lake. Well, I don't know. Somebody says near Cleveland. Well, they just had rules passed that in their Lakewood Park, so in the city park, and who knows what the exact look or feel or size of the park is, but no propane, gasoline, or even charcoal barbecues. The police have the right, passed by their city council, to search any bags and coolers they want to. Okay, maybe everybody. No dogs or pets can be brought in at all. No fireworks, personal fireworks, or even sparklers. And so on and so forth. I mean, welcome to Independence Day in America 2013. That is so wrong to forbid everything. And then I saw in the New York Times yesterday, and who reads the paper on a big holiday except Koronik? Okay. The Postal Service has been recording the outside of all mail that it's delivered to you. And this has been going on for, it seems to say here, more than a decade, since 2001. They actually take a digital photo of all mail, okay, from going to everybody's house. You know, what is it, 90% spam? They photograph the spam, too. You know, a lot of that, the commercial messages are coming in envelopes that don't even have a return address. They don't even tell you who it's from. So then you have to open the envelope to see it's another ad. But nonetheless, they're talking about 160 billion pieces of mail a year. And each one is photographed, and they save it. And there's some sort of database that they can search it. Like, they can pull up your address, everything you received at your address at any time. And of course, no, they're not looking inside. No, that's the NSA who can look inside all of your mail, all of your email, all of your phone calls, all your text messages. Yeah, that's the NSA. Thanks to the so-called Patriot Act in 2001 and the so-called PRISM Act, standing for something wonderful, really wonderful, in 2010. And so privacy in America, I know it wasn't in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but don't expect it anymore, folks. Everything you do is being tracked. And now I saw there was a suggestion that they actually want to access the video camera that's built into most home computers, like the so-called rear-facing camera, or is it front-facing camera, on your cell phone. It's just technology. They can hack into that. They're building the biggest computers in the world. The biggest computer complex is all for this invasive surveying. And I just totally disagree with it. Well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you got nothing to be afraid of. Well, how do you know what the government is going to claim is something wrong in the future? Okay? This has happened with tyrants in the past time and time again. All of a sudden, they decide that a person of a certain sort is a threat. And, of course, now it's been clearly identified, the president even, and Homeland Security, therefore, have the right to grab anybody they want to, claiming they're a terrorist, throw them in jail in the U.S. or somewhere else in the world, interrogate them all they want to, and no right of trial, no right to lawyer. Of course, that's guaranteed by our Constitution, but according to the so-called Patriot Act, well, that's gone. And, oh, yes, it was just clarified by the Attorney General a few months ago, and the president's already acted on it, that even if you're an American citizen, they can do this to you or even kill you. The president says, or NSA, says that you're a terrorist. They can just kill you. No right to trial. You don't have to be holding a gun or trying to shoot at them. They can just kill you, either on foreign soil or U.S. soil. And what about those drones? Well, that's not clear, but there are drones flying now. A few drones I saw that were bought by the Border Patrol, you know, our Mexican border with Mexico, U.S. and Mexico, are being like rented out, leased out, loaned out to some of the police departments down there to fly over their city. And you say, well, they've had helicopters up with people in them. Yeah, but those are too expensive to fly all the time. But drones could be out there all the time. Yeah, photographing every movement of everybody in every street. And you know, a few months ago, I think I said, you know, this video monitoring would take too many people. It takes a human to look at the screen. But the latest in computing, which is called quantum computing, look it up, quantum, Quantum. Will be in place a few years, maybe sooner. And that can just number crunch so much information so fast, it won't be a problem. In fact, quantum computers can break any digital encryption, any password protection you got. And then it can throw it all together. In fact, quantum computers will probably be able to start thinking for themselves. That's right, artificial intelligence. And I'm sure they'll figure out that humans are a pretty pathetic group of individuals. Unstable, erratic, violent, dangerous, even to the computer. And who knows what's going to result after that. Unless we all plug into the computer and all become part of the hive mind that will result. I know I sound like some conspiracy theorist, but folks, read your science books, okay? This is not, you know, fear and trembling about a few people in government becoming tyrants. This is a new capability that wasn't around before. And very, very scary stuff. But the post office is recording all your mail. They have been for about 12 years now. The outside is photographed before it comes to you. So I hope they enjoy all the outside of the spam and trash junk mail that I get. And how did they know that I even wanted any of that? You know, it comes to me without any sort of reason or purpose. We're going to take a slight break here. I'm going to play the first Jim Hightower spot. And we'll be right back. This one, sort of on, I chose it because of Independence Day, our 4th of July celebration, Falling Through America's Cracks. There's Jim Hightower, our friendly national populist commentator.
Poverty in America, bigger than ever and rapidly spreading. Today's turbulent economic waters are sweeping millions of Americans downstream from the middle class into poverty. And that's our nation's true economic crisis. Already, the USA has crossed an embarrassing threshold of economic infamy. 50 million poor people. Poor means they are trying to make ends meet on $11,000 or less a year for an individual, $15,000 a year for a single mom with one child, and $23,000 for a family of four. 50 million Americans. That's literally a nation of poverty in our midst, roughly the equivalent of the entire population of South Korea. Meanwhile, another 51 million Americans are classified as near poor, an individual making between $11,000 and $17,000 a year. So, more than 100 million of our people, one in three of us, are either poor or perched precariously on the brink of that abyss. Yet, Washington offers no anti-poverty agenda. Republicans simply blame the poor for their poverty, claiming they lack initiative and family morals. Democrats are mostly playing defense, trying to swat down the meanest efforts by Republicans to further hurt the poor. But society's moral imperative to extend a helping hand to the least among us, as Jesus put it in the New Testament, cannot be fulfilled merely with balm, food, and clothing. Rather, our major focus should be on the cracks themselves. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a true populist perception. People fall between the cracks because there are cracks. You wouldn't put up with that in your home, nor should we let this structural damage spread through our national house. America's poverty numbers, including the already poor, the near poor, and those rapidly tumbling down, are disgraceful, made all the more so by the fact that we're living in the richest country in the world.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
That's the first comment for today from Jim Hightower. We have another commentary coming up a little later in the hour. We're going to take a couple breaks this hour. Hey, it's holiday weekend. We can take a break even on the air, right? And rearrange things however we want to. I want to say that all opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, administrators, or anybody else. But, of course, we hope so. And, again, we're doing the opinion part to challenge you to think through issues, not to believe us and act on what we say, but to challenge yourself and read and study and get more information if you think anything I've said is wrong. Or the wrong point of view, at least, not incorrect necessarily, but the wrong point of view. And but challenge yourself. That's what I think college is all about. We are here not to indoctrinate people, even though some people think we are, but to challenge you to think. Think critically. Think logically, rationally. You know, that's why the Defense of Marriage Act went down. Supreme Court said there's no rational reason. No logical, rational reason why couples who are of the same sex can't be married. Duh, that's right. You say, well, it's emotional. It's emotional. It's traditional. And it's emotional. But if there's really no rational reason, why should it even be a religious point of view if there's no rational reason that there will be no harm incurring? And it's been proven from all the states that have already allowed same-sex marriage, no harm, no danger incurring. About 10% of our population does have homosexual sexual preference. That's the fact. And as far as we know, it's always been the fact. And you can't change what you were born with, folks. Some people think, oh, it's just learned behavior, or, you know, heterosexuals are seduced into becoming a homosexual. You know, no, that's not the case. Now, are there such a thing as bisexuals? People that really, truly were born and, well, I guess. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. I mean, sexual preference, sexual lifestyles, I don't think that's something we should legislate. That's my personal opinion, and many of you probably disagree. You believe we should legislate morality. Well, you know, our Constitution doesn't deal with that. And I think rightly so, because we were founded as a country that respects all religious beliefs, and by extension, a belief in no formalized traditional religion. So maybe you're a spiritualist, maybe you're a mysticist, maybe you are, is it a mystic? Mysticist. Believe in the mist that comes after the rain. No, I meant a person who is a mystic, who just sort of... they just meditate, and you might call it pray, and they get the message somehow. They get an idea, they get a feeling, they get a direction, without requiring traditional knowledge. So I'm not saying there isn't a spiritual dimension, but I'm saying that it doesn't have to happen in a traditional religion. But also, there's such a thing as secular humanism. There is an awful lot of good people who are not part of traditional religion and are not, in the sense that I've previously described it, spiritual, you know. So I thought our country was set up to allow all types of people to live together under a common set of laws protecting life and liberty, of course, but giving the maximum amount of opportunity to grow and explore what life is all about. And that's what I celebrate on the 4th of July. I hope it's close to what you celebrate, not just hot dogs and fireworks. A couple messages here, and we'll get into mainstream ideas. One is that George Delaney will not be having any extra hours other than his hours at the Senior Center for July and August. So his usual Senior Center is the last Friday of the month at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. The Senior Center is located inside that building from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. the last Friday of each month, and that happens to be this month, July 26, and next month, August 23rd. So that's the only place. Now, if you can't attend those Friday afternoon sessions, you're welcome to schedule individual appointment with Michigan Representative George Delaney. His office has a toll-free number, but you just go to mi.gov, and you can search for Delaney, D-A-R-A-N-Y, and they'll get you the email. You can email through that website. And the toll-free number, if you're writing it down or you're listening to the podcast and want to rewind it, 855. There's a new toll-free number I hadn't heard of, 855. Boy, they're always changing things. 775-1515. So that's the direct line, toll-free, to the Lansing office of Michigan Representative George Delaney, 855. 775-1515. And he may be elsewhere starting in September, but just those two Friday meetings, or contact his office and just set something up if you want to talk to our local representative. Okay. I know you heard one statement by Jim Hightower. Here's the other one, and this has been a lot in the news, is that even during the holiday season, all of a sudden, because the Supreme Court got wishy-washy and said we don't need part of the voting rights bill, a couple states like Texas and now North Carolina have zoomed into action, since Republicans there have majorities, vast majorities, to change voting rights to make it much more difficult for people to vote. Like in North Carolina, if this passes and if their governor, who's expected to sign it, signs it, and it could happen today down there or Monday at the latest, when most people are out of town and don't even realize it's happening. So you can't have a protest or something if nobody's around, right? They're going to end voting on Sunday. They're going to end voting on the same day you register. They're going to end early voting. And, of course, that will allow fewer people. That will not allow everybody to vote as easily. Because, you don't want too many people to vote. You only want the people that have IDs. And photo IDs are part of that, too. Did I mention that? I didn't mention that. So there's four issues there. And of course, you don't want to make voting convenient. Because, only rich people have the limousines and the scheduling software on their iPads to get them to vote on time. Of course, they're all using absentee ballots. Again, their lawyers provide that and think ahead for that, I'm sure. And I'm not making a joke of the rich, but those are all options of the rich that are easy. They have managers. They have lawyers. They have accountants. And just say, do it. Keep me on top of it. Keep me in the loop. I want to keep my power. And, of course, poor people don't have any of those options. And so shame on North Carolina. But here's Jim Hightower saying the same sort of thing in a much more eloquent way.
Something profoundly awful has seeped into the top strata of American society. Our nation's corporate and political elites have developed an immunity to shame. It has become morally acceptable in these lofty circles to enrich themselves while turning their backs on the rest of us. Even more damning, the power elites now feel ethically free to slash America's tattered safety net, leaving more holes than net for the workaday majority of Americans who've been knocked down by an ongoing economic disaster created by these very elites. Welcome to North Carolina, the latest state to flaunt its shame-resistant political leadership, which now consists of corporate-funded Tea Party extremists who loathe the very idea of a safety net. They've been gutting everything from their public schools to health care, and now they've turned on their own citizens who are out of work. In a state with the fifth highest jobless rate in the country and with no recovery in sight, the right-wing governor and legislature recently whacked weekly unemployment benefits by a third and cut the number of weeks people can receive this essential aid. That official minginess automatically disqualified the state from getting $700 million a year for long-term jobless payments from the federal government. Yet Governor Pat McCrory issued a cockamamie Kafkaesque claim that the gut job ensures that, quote, our citizens' unemployment safety net is secure, while providing, quote, an economic climate that allows job creators to start hiring again. Yeah, we'll all hold our breath until those job creators get going. This is Jim Hightower saying, if ignorance is bliss, McCrory must be ecstatic. Meanwhile, his shameless immorality has unleashed a growing storm of weekly demonstrations at the Capitol. For information, link to the North Carolina Justice Center at ncjustice.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
Well, there you go. North Carolina, we don't love you. And anybody who thinks that there's freedom in North Carolina or that they're respecting the Independence Day appropriately is just as wrong as they can be. You are so mistaken. You know, even voter IDs. You say, what's wrong with making sure that it's... First of all, there is no evidence anywhere in the United States of major, that is, voter fraud significant enough to change an election. There hasn't been, and we haven't even had voter ID requirements. So why do you need to do something? Well, just in case. Now, why do you need to do something before it happens and before it's proven that everybody in your state that's able to vote and registered has a voter ID? Prove that to me first, and then I'll go along with it, okay? Then I have no problem with it. Can you see that? There's logic there somewhere. I'm joined in the studio by Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I think we make an adjustment here. Well, I'll keep talking.
It's the level check time. Yeah. Yes.
Something that I'm not afraid to do.
I can. Talk. No, of course not. So we just got word. Dennis has been trying to track down Tarek Beydoun, council candidate for Dearborn City Council, who is his voicemail now on his cell phone is saying he's out of town through Tuesday. So I guess he had a quick holiday that came up and forgot to tell WHFR radio.
That's fine. Well, and that was the thing. He actually, I can't hear myself. I don't know if you can hear me. He
plug in more.
Well, you're crystal clear. Anyway, we made the appointment for him to come in about a week ago, a little over a week ago. So things come up.
Yep, yep. Well, obviously, but I mean, he's a lawyer. If you don't respect your clients, if you can't make a meeting, you somehow notify them. So I'm, you know, you judge, folks. He didn't let us know he couldn't be here. We have offered very kindly that he can reschedule, but we have other people scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, if you don't think this is the way to get votes, fine. But if I was running for office, I wouldn't pass up a chance.
Absolutely. You know, and it's on me to a degree, too. I should have set up maybe just a confirmation email this earlier in the week. You know,
yeah, certainly on July 4th, you should have contacted him.
Yeah.
No, I mean, obviously he might have been out of town since something might have come up on Wednesday, the day before or something. Sure. But so we'll be glad to reschedule Tarek if he calls us and asks for that. The other candidates we have contacted, email, by phone, a variety of ways, if they haven't got the message. Again, we're only doing challengers.
Right.
Because that's how much time we have. 15 minutes per challenger to the Dearborn City Council. Remember that the primary election on August 6th will have, I think, 21 candidates. They are vying for the top 14 positions. Now, only five of the present seven council candidates, incumbents, have chosen to run again. And so I would assume, since they have name recognition, all of those five will be part of the 14 that will be in the top running for office in November, but they'll need to get this down from 21 to the top 14. And I would think that the challengers who don't have that kind of name recognition citywide would definitely want to do everything they can to get in touch with people.
Sure.
Interestingly, two people we haven't had on the show have gotten 5x8 picture postcards promoting themselves to people in East Dearborn. I won't mention their names, but it's interesting. Each of them sent to my house two. Well, in one case, one candidate sent one to my daughter, who's not living with me anymore. She was temporarily, she and my granddaughter, it was great fun for the last 2.5 years, and now she has her own place in Allen Park. But she was a registered voter in Dearborn, so they sent it to her and one to me, and then the other candidate sent two to my address, different pictures, though, different info in both, in the last month. And neither of those two candidates, anyway, have scheduled to be on WHFR. So I guess each of them has their own campaign managers or their own strategy on how to get to the most people. And I understand from talking to politicians in the past, the direct mailings with your picture on it, that's the most effective way.
Right.
To try to get your name out there and your message out there, because maybe they'll stay around. Maybe they'll sit on your counter or your desktop or something.
Your refrigerator.
Yeah. And so maybe that isn't a bad idea. But remember, all of the podcasts of the Journal, and I talked to a HFCC retiree just a day or two ago, and they didn't know that the Journal is archived, is podcast. And, well, I can't listen on Fridays from 1 to 2. Well, duh. All of our talk shows, including our Tuesday forums, that's noon to, 1 to 2 o'clock, I'll remember, because next week is going to be Dearborn Heights News and Views.
Yeah,
not with Dennis this time.
No.
But councilperson Ned Apigian, always an opinionated gentleman. Mm. We're going to have their emergency manager. No, they're not. It's not an emergency financial manager, but they have someone working at some level of the government. Does he report to the police department? I think he does.
To the mayor.
Directly to the mayor.
Yes, he does.
Okay. So we'll talk about all kinds of crises that might happen in Dearborn Heights and what they're planning And I assume Dearborn has a similar person. I'm not sure where they're assigned. I don't think there's somebody directly reporting to Mayor O'Reilly.
I don't think so. I do know. Yeah, Bob Ankrap is who you're speaking about, and his office is actually in the police station. That's where his main office is, downstairs.
Right.
But you know, he's my boss at the TV station. He wears a lot of hats in the city.
Yeah. So he's
and he runs the newsletter,
earning his money. So he's sort of communications and crisis manager or planning manager.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, it'd be interesting to meet him. One of the problems is what do you do in an emergency if you're running a government facility or a radio station? When we had the big power outage back in 2004, some of our major radio and TV stations were off the air for a period of time. Why? They forgot to check their backup generators, and one of them, a major radio station complex, one owner with six or seven stations in one facility, they didn't even have a backup generator. So all six of their stations were down until they were able to rent one and pull it in and power it up. So everybody should plan, including individuals. You know, I think you might remember a TV commercial. I think it's for emergency ceiling lights or something. In the event of a fire and smoke in your house, does your family have an evacuation plan? You know, do you have a ladder for them to climb down out of a certain bedroom window on the second floor, or what? You know, so it's emergency planning, even for the obvious emergencies in a household, is very, very desirable. You should do it before there's a problem. But most people are so busy, they just do, you know, well, let's eat now, let's watch TV now, let's go to the baseball game, let's have a barbecue. You know, you don't talk among yourselves about planning for future issues of any sign, emergencies or just, you know, planning for college or whatever, you know, and you got to talk more.
Did you have fire drills with your family, either when you were a kid or with your own daughter?
I was mentioning to people the other day is that when I was growing up in Detroit, there was actually the Detroit Fire Department did a local television show 5 days a week in the afternoon with puppets and things, but it was live, and they were there to entertain the kids, but every day teach fire safety issues.
That's awesome.
And he said, well, they got to run out of topics soon. I mean, you just don't play with matches. No, there's so many things
so
that
many.
You need to know
sure.
about in terms of don't stick your finger in electric outlets.
Yeah.
And then they would show how it would spark and fires on a stove. If they're oil-based that were flaming, don't try to put it out with water, for
Absolutely.
Example. And I know all these things because I was, like, indoctrinated with the safety stuff. And even in the schools, and I'm not sure it's done this much anymore, they would send this team from the fire department and the police department into the schools, elementary school, high school, special assemblies, or come into individual science classrooms and put on demonstrations about fire safety and even safety issues relating to the police. In other words, lock your doors on your house if you don't want people coming in stealing something. There was a report in one of the papers locally last week that somebody came in and stole things out of people's house in, I think it was East Dearborn, while they were there.
Really?
During the day. Because they didn't lock the front door.
Right.
So they saw the door was unlocked. They just went in. They grabbed the nearby stuff. The family, I guess, wasn't in the living room or something.
Right.
And just walked out with it.
How did they just realized things were gone?
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Lock your car. Don't leave it idling in the driveway while you run back in the house. Because there are people, you know, cruising the neighborhoods.
Sure.
Even your rich neighborhood, of course, because there's more to steal in rich neighborhoods, right?
Right.
And they're looking for opportunities. That's what it is. You know, maybe they're out for a walk or something, look like a normal person out for a walk, and they're actually looking for opportunity. They're scoping out the neighborhood.
Casing the place.
Yeah, yeah. And so one of the papers this week actually has a big article about suggestions. Oh, no, it's an editorial. Oh, yeah, the editorial. Well, let's jump right to it.
All right.
Oh, I mentioned Tarek Baydoun is not available for an interview today. He's out of town until Tuesday, so...
You know, and we have, so everybody knows, in addition to the challengers, as we keep stressing, these are the challengers for the different elected positions. We also have other interviews in there, as they say, in the hopper. So just stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, obviously, some of you are probably saying, well, you're from Henry Ford Community College. What the heck is happening over there? You know, are you deeply in debt? What's going on? And I'll get to that in a minute. I just wanted to mention that the editorials, first of all, I did read at the bottom. Remember, I was complaining that Press and Guide, who the heck writes their editorials? There's a Mavis McKinney. And is Mavis a male or a female name?
Mavis is a female name.
Female name, okay. I don't know. Editor, Eastern Region. Is that everything east of the Mississippi? Or whatever. A Heritage Eastern Region. Anyway, Mavis seems to be the one, since he's called the editor, that probably writes their editorials. But in this case, it talks about the Dearborn Police Department. Still, I guess he could write one editorial and they change the name of the police department, you know. But it says, and this is, I think, in relating to the front page story from last Sunday, that is June 30th, Press and Guide. Our police chief, Ronald Haddad, is proud of the falling crime rate. And the fact that they've been doing outreach to the community, like Nixle, which I criticized earlier in the show, for giving me way too much information about even obvious things. But some of you are not thinking about the obvious things. So here's a part of the editorial. It says, every week, Press and Guide reporters see the same types of reports in both cities. And now they're, it's page two. Page two is now the crime report page.
Oh, really?
In the Press and Guide, yeah. And they've expanded. It's not just little headlines. It's little meaty stories now, too, which they don't investigate. They just write it off the so-called blotter, the police blotter. But anyway, for example, they mentioned Dearborn Police Department recently issued a battery of tips on how people can avoid being victims of crimes of opportunity. The shame is that the department has to periodically issue the tips, like on Nixle, and will continue to issue them because so many people make it easy for the bad guys by choosing to not change their behavior that is not careful or cautious. And excuse me, folks, in the 1950s, police department people, fire department people, they got to the schools, they had their own local TV shows on broadcast television because we didn't have cable then, but they couldn't do that today. Why? Because who would sponsor it? Nobody. It's like they're giving that time away that they can make good bucks on just for the good of the public. Five times a week, every day, in approaching prime time, 5 or 6 o'clock at night, which is when these shows were on. No, you never want to do that because private profit commercial stations, they couldn't make that extra $10, $20, $30, $40,000 a day that they could from selling ads and putting on other sleazy shows that don't have any direct community service obligation. So I do blame commercial media a lot for not allowing that opportunity, but also police and fire departments. You got to cut back on staff, cut back on budget. Well, there goes the outreach of that sort, which I thought was very helpful. Anyway, it seems that they don't lock their homes. Valuables were left within plain view in their house, and somebody broke in or walked in if you leave the door unlocked. Typical things that are stolen are iPods, MP3 players, laptops, global positioning systems, also known as GPS, duffel bags, backpacks, textbooks, loose change, paper money, wallets, and purses. Then on campus here, we have constantly reminding students everywhere, not just at WHFR, we're pretty secure, but everywhere on campus, including faculty, stuff. People case the joint here, too, as well as elsewhere in Dearborn, and if there's an opportunity, they take it. Haddad has said in this article, whoa, serious crime is down. All of this is not, it's crime, but it's minor crime. It's not felony crime. It's misdemeanor crime. And I understand there's an awful lot more of that going on now. So I'd like to see the numbers, if they keep it. Drug busts, minor crime drug busts, too. I understand from one of the 19th District judges, it's increasing tremendously. And of course, illegal drug use does disturb society, too, in all its implications. So there's some nice rules there. Read the whole article. It's actually a two-page, long editorial. And so if it's Mavis McKinney doing it, thank you very much. And thank you for writing them at length, too, not just two little columns, but to go on and so on. Lock your garages, too, and sheds, and never leave a window open when you're gone, and so on and so forth.
I'm just in favor of getting a really big dog. And just, yes. You know, I mean, that's a loud one. Doesn't mm-hmm. even have to be mean, just loud.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's preventive medicine.
As long as they're quiet when you get back home.
Exactly. There was something I wanted to mention, if I could, mm-hmm. based on the college, and I know we're going to go into finish up on the topic you started earlier, but there's a program here. I'm not positive you're aware of it. It's
amnesty
called...
program?
No.
Well, I wanted to mention that, but go on.
Well, it's a mentoring program here. Are you familiar with mm-hmm. that? With
sure.
The program?
Heard of it? Talk about it.
Inside Track. My wife was a prominent part of that program a few years ago when we first came back to school, and mm-hmm. they're winning awards. It's in fact, it's HFCC Peer Mentoring Program wins Innovation of the Year. HFCC Inside Track Peer Mentoring, it won the college's Innovation of the Year for 2013. Amy Helling and Diva Williams, co-coordinators and founders of the program, received the award at a celebration on April 12th. Not to take anything away from the Amy and Diva, because I know them personally. My wife did work with them, but they did not find it. They weren't the founders of this. Mm-hmm. This goes back a little bit, predates them. And a big part of this was Diane Greene, who we've had on the show more than a few times, too. Mm-hmm. So I just want to thank the
one of the big time counselors.
Yeah. She was the associate dean of counseling.
She was the head of the department, has now taken some time off.
Regardless, this is a great program. And mm-hmm. what happens is when kids come into the school, freshmen, they're right out of high school. Some of them have learning disabilities. Some of them have maybe English is their second language. A lot of whatever. They have challenges. And these mentors, they have as many as a couple to maybe 8 or 10 that they work with. And they just help them through their day. And it's just a phenomenal program. So if there's anybody out there listening that has themselves coming to the school, or they have a young one coming, look right into Inside Track. It doesn't cost anything, and the mentors will help them with every facet, from financial aid to going to the library and getting tutorials.
Segue from financial aid. HFCC, right here, Henry Ford Community College, your friendly local community college, supported by tax dollars, millage dollars from Dearborn, will offer amnesty from July 15th through August 14th. One time only, amnesty, okay? And it seems that as many as 30,000 students have past due balances.
Wow.
They owe the college money. 30,000. I don't know how many years these have been working out. And of those, between $5,000 and $8,000 have debts of several thousand dollars or more.
That's a lot of money.
That's practically the whole college education.
That might fix it right there.
Because their tuition is second lowest in Michigan, you know. HFCC officials don't know how much the plan will bring in. It's a new idea in higher education. And what it is, amnesty is not forgiving at all. No, they'll forgive 50%. So you pay half of what you owe, and the other half, you don't have to pay back.
Ever.
Right, ever. Okay? And so that allows them to lift holds on registering for new classes, obtaining transcripts. I don't think they're going to get another loan, though, with this on their record. But they can come back and get transcripts. They can receive diplomas or certificates. And also it improves their credit scores necessary for buying a car or a home, because we will report them not having paid their loans to various credit services. Of course, that's the least we can do, I guess. And it says here, and I heard $12 million, says here that those 30,000 students owe us $16 million. I heard from the president of the college, who we hope to interview on the journal in the near future, like within a week or two, for a whole hour. That's President Stan Jensen, our new president here. Things are being done. Plans are afoot. People have been laid off. Things have been cut. Hopefully not to the disservice of any of our quality educational system, but obviously compromises have had to be made. But part of the big debt is the student loan debt. The at least $12 million, which I heard from the president directly, I know because I wrote it down as $12 million. And in the article it says $16 million. Kevin Culler, who is the director of Enrollment Services and Financial Aid, supposedly said $16 million. But, of course, the writer here confused it with our $16.6 million of deficit for next year.
Which is overall.
But, by the way, we figured out how to cover with these various cuts and reductions and so on, all but $4.5 million. So there's still things we've got to cut and have to do, but we have plans to reduce that. Okay, we have to, right? And here the article says college officials reduce it to a $6.5 million deficit through a tuition increase. That's a little confused. There's a timeline problem there, folks. The overall deficit, including that, is $4.5 million that we still have to figure out some answers to, which may have been figured out already. And we'll, when we get Stan Jensen here, our current president, in a week or two, I'm sure he'll tell us the latest on that.
Now, let's be clear. When you were talking about student loans, it's the, right. the school itself doesn't say, well, here's some money to the students, and you pay us back when you, you know, in a timely manner. The school gets the funds from the federal government. Now, for some reason, the student doesn't qualify for those loans after the fact. Maybe they go to a few classes, get their refund check, and then don't show up anymore. The student then has to pay back the college because the college is on the hook to pay back the government. That's so right. that's what the college is paying back the government regardless of if they get their money. But
right.
if they don't get their money,
and remember, it's not the government, it's banks that exactly. the government authorized. Yes. And that they've changed their policies. First of all, you know, for new loans for college, the previous rate of like 3.5% is now doubled. Mm-hmm. It's close to 7% now, 6 and some odd percent. And who benefits? Nobody. But any new loans taken out will be at the higher rate. Yes, Congress could have voted to keep it low, 3.5%, but they didn't. Our U.S. Congress in Washington, D.C., could have stopped that. There was a one-year delay on raising the rate. I guess to sort of forewarn new students coming in, if you don't start college now and get your money now, it's going to go up. But the current debt amount is whatever the interest rate is when you took out the loan. But if you got to blame somebody, it's not the federal government. It's the banks. And the colleges, though, are the ones that technically are in debt for the money.
Exactly.
And they have to work out a payment system. What happened is the banks now want the money up front, immediately. So that didn't help our debt, did it here. That we have to pay the banks back almost immediately for what's owed. Previously, we were just paying a portion each year, like installment payments. And you know, some of the money would be paid. We'd catch up when some of the people that owed money did pay it back. But there's a huge amount owed now, I understand from that presentation by Dr. Jensen, our president of HFCC, that they can't even find over half the students. They're not at the same address, not at the same phone number. They don't answer their email.
So if somebody, if the school is willing to take half, like you said, this amnesty program, I think they're just looking at it as, let's get something out of this. You right. know, half will, yeah. it's yeah. a motivator.
As they point, it says even a 1% return, even just one person out of 100 or $1 out of 100 that's owed could mean hundreds of thousands of dollars that we don't have now, since the total amount is either 12 or 16 million, depending on who we listen to
right.
here. So, but it definitely, you don't want it to hurt your credit in the future, folks. And it's only a one-time thing and only for 1 month. So if you know anybody that does owe some money to Henry Ford Community College, it's a 50% gift here for whatever is still owed, and a chance to clear the books and get a new start. And so I think that's a wonderful deal. Spread the word, folks. It's on page 3A of last Sunday's Press and Guide. With about 8 minutes going before Highway 61 starts up, our blues show for 4 hours on Friday afternoons, I wanted to bring a couple stories here. Dennis, since you have a job with cable television of Dearborn Heights and you're sort of in the City Hall building,
yeah.
What do you know about the millage request? This was from last Sunday's Press and Guide for the libraries.
Now, that would have been based on the city council meeting, which was almost 2 weeks ago.
No, it hasn't been finalized yet.
Right, but they did bring it up. Yes. I was not at the meeting, so I can't speak intelligently about it, but I know that that was the meeting where they were addressing it.
Well,
libraries in trouble.
The director of the libraries out there,
Mike McCaffrey,
he said, look, if you don't have a millage that increases, or additional millage that you add to present millage. And again, that's property values have gone down. In fact, I looked at my tax bill in Dearborn, and I'm saving $300 over last year.
Really?
And yet, I'm paying the same mills.
Yeah.
So, and my property value is the same. The assessment value is the same. So I don't figure out, unless they're 1 year behind or something. So the city of Dearborn and the other people I pay taxes to, they're getting less from me. In fact, it's almost, Okay, it's $300 less out of $4,000 that I pay on my house. And in East Dearborn, nice neighborhood. Okay, three bedroom, four bath. Okay, anyway, jacuzzi. Anyway, I've been
lucky. No lawn.
No, I got not in the front of it. Oh, I got a little forest in the front of my house. But anyway, maybe they're charging me for that. But so that's almost like 8% reduction. Mm-hmm. But that means 8% less for the city of Dearborn, for Wayne County, and the libraries. But the libraries in Dearborn Heights, I believe they've always had a separate millage.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That is excellent.
So they're not part of city government. Now, Dearborn does have a millage supplement for the libraries that were passed, but they can't survive on that alone. So the city government still has to take general fund money in Dearborn to keep the libraries going. But if the library, they have two libraries in Dearborn Heights, are going to survive, apparently it's going to come up as soon as next year.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks he could decimate the programs and maybe close one of the libraries and survive for 3 years, but otherwise they're dead in the water.
Right.
In fact, it's terrible. I've even heard people from Dearborn Library say, well, when we're going to have to start providing service to people from Dearborn Heights soon. Whoa, is it a done deal that Dearborn Heights is going to lose their libraries? Whoa, wait a minute.
Don't you remember Jane Ahern? She said the same thing.
Yeah,
she said
I heard it. Yeah.
If they do close, she goes, well, we better get our, what was it, the snow branch that they did close in Dearborn?
Yeah.
She says, we better get that open again. And, the proximity to Dearborn Heights is obvious.
Yeah, but it's still not that convenient, still.
No, but I mean, her point was it looks imminent, yes.
I never heard of merging community libraries with another city. That's crazy. I mean, resources, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Collections, but you don't close the building. I mean, if people want a book or something, maybe it could be shipped there within a day or something from some other library, but not closing the building, the meeting place, the gathering place for a lot of communities. Is the Berwyn Center by itself? It's not in a library.
No. The Berwyn Center is an old elementary school. That's where our studios and my office is.
Right.
Berwyn Senior Center. And then there's the Eaton Senior Center. And then the Richard A. Young Center. And that was a big thing. And I remember Janet Badalow about a year ago saying, hey, we need to close one of those.
Financing for those even. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Well, a separate millage issue may be on the ballot, as well as Crestwood. And that's in Dearborn Heights.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they just call it Dearborn Heights? Because there's a couple school districts in Dearborn Heights. There's three. Which doesn't make sense to me, but okay. Dennis is shaking his head. No.
There's a lot that doesn't mean, and I'm not, Dearborn Heights is such an interesting city. Just its geography, the way it's shaped is weird.
It seems that Crestwood has no money for building maintenance. And so they may seek a separate bond and millage just to repair their buildings. And, it used to be in the olden days that you had part of your regular general fund budget every year to fix what breaks down each year. Like, roof repairs on a regular basis, or plumbing, or heating, air conditioning, or even just cutting the grass and cleaning the bathrooms. And now, just pay the teachers, pay the administrators, and get the heck out of there because we can't afford anything else. But it looks like they have to go to the district, and that hasn't been set yet either. But the board of Crestwood Schools out there will decide whether or not there's going to be a millage also on the ballot for that. And all I can say is, folks, for those at least have a steady income or a full-time job or even a regular part-time job, your taxes are going down. And everybody's happy about that just because of property values or who knows what, just like mine went down 8%. But that means all the services you depend on from your government and your libraries are also being, really hurt here. And so these millages will not force you to pay more money than what you were paying a couple of years ago. And I know
it's really it's bringing it back to those standards.
Well, we pointed out the city of Dearborn made the same argument to the people of Dearborn 2 years ago. Give us 5 years of an additional millage increase to make up for what we've lost. We hope property values, when it expires in 2 years, will have come back up to where we don't need it anymore.
Right.
So that the number of mills that we had before will bring in the money we need. Right now it doesn't, so we need more mills just to bring in the same amount that we had before 2008. And that's a perfect argument. It did pass in Dearborn with that argument. But in Dearborn, we're expecting Dearborn Public Schools to have a millage, probably. Mm-hmm. We're expecting Henry Ford Community College to need a millage increase. I'm not sure if it's going to be increased for K-12, but they're going to need a millage renewal at least. And Dearborn Heights, it looks like at least two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anything's coming from the city out there. I don't know if the city's.
You know, do you, maybe you can ask Ned on Tuesday.
Oh, we will.
Seriously, because this is he's, something he's on.
He's
council.
Right there. He's, yeah, he's at hears that the discussions, unless he.
Don't.
Has to walk out of the room for a moment okay. or something.
Anyway, but no, I'd be interested to hear what he.
No, everybody sort of zones out at times, but I have not heard anything, seen anything in the papers about Dearborn Heights, the city, needing additional millage. That's not, I don't think, going to happen next year.
I don't believe it will.
Or this year.
But. This is a really big year, though, with all, you know, the mayor's up for re-election. There's a lot going on in the city, and it's exciting. Unfortunately, I don't write for the paper anymore.
One of the things that's very exciting, and here's a little plug for WHFR also, and you've probably been hearing our spot play, the Concert of Colors is happening at several locations, and then they started last night at the Charles M. Wright African American History Museum in Detroit. Tonight at 5 o'clock, music from October Babies on the South Lawn of the DIA, and... this is in the papers, by the way. Dearborn Press and Guide from Wednesday. There's a whole section 1B, page the first page of section B, about Concert of Colors this weekend. And what a great lineup of entertainment, all free, and just a great time will be had by all.
It is so much
and
fun.
We're going to be down there at the Max M. Fisher Center tomorrow. Okay, this is where the Symphony Orchestra. The Detroit Symphony Orchestra performs at Symphony Hall and the so-called Music Box stage in that building. We're going to be in the Music Box, which is renamed the Diversity Stage for this event. And we'll be broadcasting live. You'll hear myself, Dennis, one time or another, between about 2 o'clock and 10 o'clock tomorrow and Sunday. Two long broadcasting days. So we get a direct feed from the mix from the stage of all the performances. And there'll be little breaks in between when they do set up, and we'll be calling into the station and making sure that the signal quality is really pretty good. It's direct phone line, not a cell phone call, so it should sound pretty good. But fun will be had by all down there. It's all free entertainment at the Max M. Fisher Center. It's on Woodward Avenue, a few blocks south of the I-94 intersection. Hope to see you down there. We'll have our own WHFR table in the lobby, and we're going to have an awful lot of fun. Well, it's not going to be awful. It's going to be wonderful.
Wonderful.
So, wonderful fun. Yeah. Awfully wonderful.
There you go.
Yeah. I had to tell you real quick, Joanne is here. It's WHFR Dearborn, 2 o'clock. We got to get out of here. The journal has to move on. Dearborn residents have mixed reaction to proposed garage use ordinance. And it's coming up this Monday. Dearborn Planning Commission is meeting Monday, June 8th, somewhere, probably City Hall. I don't know. I don't think it says there. Well, go find it. It's probably at City Hall. And basically, the city doesn't want people to live in their garages. Now, a lot of people use their garages for social gatherings, like a family room, a rec room in the summer. Because they're outside, some air, you know. But then they screen in things or put a sliding door instead of a garage door on it. And that looks suspiciously like you're living there. And so there's rules against that. And they make, you know, there's health and safety rules about that. But a lot of residents say we can't live without our garage for social gatherings. And maybe there are even some of them living there. So that'll come up at the Planning Commission. And probably either be postponed or tied for several more meetings. But it's happening Monday. So if you want to be